Thank you for tuning in to the Essential Church Podcast, a church where we focus on restoration over denomination. If you're in the Virginia Beach area and would like to find out more about Essential Church, visit our webpage at essentialchurch.com.
All right, how many of y'all are wondering right now, why is the painter Bob Ross and Brian Scalabrine following after some creepy guy? Some of y'all got those references, some of y'all haven't, I don't know. Brian Scalabrine was like a bench player for the Celtics for a couple of years. I'm going to try to explain that scene a little bit better. And, you know, the thing is, you watch the biblical movies whenever they come out, and there's kind of like three things that are going on whenever you watch those. One is low budget and bad acting. And actually, that's one and two. And then the third one is there's a cultural piece that we miss. And so both of those issues, or all three of those issues, kind of make it hard to follow a lot of the Bible movies. And even if they had great acting, and even if they had a good budget, there'd still be some cultural things that would make stuff seem kind of awkward. And that's what I always have to deal with. So hopefully I'm going to come around by the end of this service, make a little bit of that seem less awkward, but I can't make the Jesus in that thing look a little less creepy. I just can't do it. It's like, I don't know, moving on. The whole focus of this series, though, is looking at Jesus and asking, you know, what was it about Jesus that made people follow after him? And this morning we'll be looking at just this piece about Jesus that there wasn't anything special about him, but yet there kind of was. So it's kind of what we're going to get into as we go through this. But if you have honey, is there anybody got honey in the room? All right. Here's the thing. If you could take the honey and pass it around, just put a dab on your finger, a dab, not a squirt. I don't have any crackers coming. It gets messy if you put more than just a dab, and just hold it, okay? Just it'll come into play in just a minute or so, but just ride with me on that. Trust me, this is going to come back to play here in about 2-3 minutes, maybe 5 if I get off on a tangent. So back to Jesus, though. There's little indications in the text, though, that kind of show us, okay, there was kind of something unique about Jesus. And every once in a while, if you're looking for them, you'll see it. And one of them you'll find in Mark chapter 1, verse 22. It says, the people were amazed at Jesus' teaching, for he taught with real authority, quite unlike the teachers of the religious law. And the question is, okay, how was he teaching? What was it about his style that was different? And what most people believe is that when they looked at the religious teachers of that day, when they would teach, they would always kind of give their teachings quoting a bunch of other people. In the same way that you might hear a pastor, and even I'll do it in this message, actually. A lot of pastors were back in that day and time, they would quote like, well, this rabbi says this, and this rabbi says this, and this rabbi says this, and so because of that, I would kind of recommend this is probably the right interpretation of it, which is how most of the guys taught. Jesus just gets up and doesn't have to quote anybody. He just says, here's what it means. And people were like, he's not going to quote anybody? He's not going to give any other reference. And part of that is, you know, when you lay truth out, you really don't need a reference. You know what I mean? It's like, I don't have to give you the scholarly reference for why 2 + 2 = 4. You know, I don't have to tell you that Pascal discovered something and an abacus, you know, will show it. I don't have to give you any of that. You can just kind of go, yeah, I get it. And so when people heard him teach, they were amazed at the fact he didn't quote anybody else, and what they were hearing clicked. And so it was just kind of a neat sort of thing, and I'll get to this in a second. And now kind of from that is when you look over into the book of Acts, you then see the disciples begin to get up and teach, and there they're called apostles. In Acts 2:42, it says, they devoted themselves daily to the apostles' teaching and to breaking bread and into prayer. And so you got this unique thing where Jesus is getting up and teaching, and people are taking notice of it. And then you got the apostles over in the book of Acts who are teaching, and thousands of people are coming to faith, you know, all the time. And you're like, okay, there's something unique going on here. And if you're like me, you sort of look at them and you think there must have been something special about the disciples to make them, I don't know, teach like that. And what you're going to see is these guys were just like you and me. And that didn't preclude them or exclude them from being used by God to do something amazing. That's what we'll be getting into. What made them unique, though, is simply the fact that they were disciples. Now, a couple things I got to show as we go along. We don't really know what the word disciple means in our day and time because we just we don't really use it in everyday vernacular, so we're not really familiar with it as much. We just know from in church circles. But what's interesting is that the word Christian, you know that word Christian, we have 1,000 different definitions for that word nowadays. That actually was a word that was intended to replace the word disciple. Do you know that? If you go over to Luke wrote it, over in Acts 11, it says in there that the disciples were first called Christians in Antioch. And so Christians became a new way to refer to the disciples. And of course, Christians originally just meant people who were like Christ, people who were acting like Jesus and looked like Jesus and were talking like Jesus and saying the same things as Jesus, which is what, ironically, is a disciple. A disciple is someone who doesn't just learn what the teacher learns. They learn to live and do and act and speak like the teacher lived, learned, act, and did and speak. This idea so impressed me that when I felt God call me to be a pastor, one of the things I did is I spent a whole summer doing this kind of discipleship internship. It worked out perfectly. My roommate was, his dad was a pastor. And so instead of him going home for college for the summer, I went to his house for college for the, you know, home from college for the summer. I lived in his room and hung out there, ate all the food he would have eaten. So it kind of balanced out. And I just followed his dad around all day long. And I'd never seen any kung fu TV shows or like that. I didn't get the reference, but every day when we leave the house, he'd go, "Come, Grasshopper, I show you many things." And I had no idea why he was calling me Grasshopper all summer. Some of y'all get that reference, some don't. And then he also, whenever we would pass by, because there's a lot of agricultural areas in Fort Pierce, whenever we would pass by a farm or something, he'd just nonchalantly lean over to me and go, "So why does the grass grow?" And I'm like, I don't get the reference. I'm lost. And years later, I actually saw an episode of Kung Fu and it made sense. It's the, for those of you who get it, moving on. So for the rest of y'all, forget it. So it let me know not just the book stuff I was going to learn in seminary, but what's a pastor like? You know, how do you, I don't know, I don't say how you act, but just got to kind of see what it was like to be a pastor, you know, intimately. I mean, you know, saw how their family was and saw, you know, what it was like to be at the office on a Monday when there was nothing going on kind of thing. And just, it was really helpful. And that was the kind of discipleship that they would do back in those days to become a rabbi. And it was a very elaborate, in-depth process. And the reason why this is important to kind of note is the Bible says we're to go make disciples of all people. And so if you think about it, we're supposed to make disciples of all people, yet we don't really even understand what this whole model of discipleship really is as they understood. That's kind of what I want to get into this morning, is that for somebody to become a disciple, there was a process that they went through back in their day and time. Kids would start off around age 6, and they would go to a formalized schooling. In some communities, it'd be just the boys, and some communities, it'd be the girls and the boys of these Jewish communities. And so they would go to this formalized schooling. And on the first day of school, they would take honey, this is where it comes into play, and they would place a drop of honey on each of the kids' fingers, and then they would also place it on, if they had some sort of like a tablet that they would be able to, like, you know, scratch on, they would place it on there as well. And the teacher would then, after letting it sit there for quite a while, like as it has for you, and now how many of y'all right now like honey? You can raise your other hand. How many are like salivating over getting to taste honey right now? That was kind of the point. So go ahead and lick off your honey. That sounded funny. lick the honey off your finger. And the teacher would then read some passages, or actually read, he actually would quote some passages like Ezekiel 3:3 that says, "Son of man, eat this scroll that I'm giving and fill your stomach with it. And so I ate it, and it tasted as sweet as honey in my mouth." Many, many times in the Old Testament, it will talk about the scriptures being like honey. And the idea the teacher would explain is that my hope as you're going through schooling is that the word of God would bring such anticipation in its reading and of its hearing, as did the honey that you were anticipating to eat. That as you read the words of God, as you study the words of God, as you meditate on them and learn them, that you would find them to satisfy and be as sweet to your soul as the honey was that you just enjoyed. And that was how they would start off the school at the very beginning. You can imagine for a 6-year-old, this would be a great way to kind of object lesson for them. You preschool teachers kind of think about how that works. It's great. And so that would begin their studies, and they would learn to memorize between ages 6 and 10, Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, Deuteronomy. They would memorize the first 5 books of the Bible. And so right now you're thinking to yourself, no way. I could never picture my kids. There's no way that a 6, 7, 8, 9, 10-year-old could learn all of that. Well, I'll prove to you that you can learn whatever it is you study and focus on. Depending on what generation you're a part of, you can play along whatever it makes sense to you. Beans don't burn on the kitchen, and beans don't burn on the grill. That's right. Yeah, some of y'all know that. Some of you are like, I have no idea what they're talking about. And the reason why you don't know what they're talking about is because you know that in West Philadelphia, born and raised on the... Exactly, exactly. Yet others of you in the room know that there's 104 days of summer vacation, school comes along just to end it. The annual problem for our generation is... Come on, come on, y'all. You little ones know it, right? Finding a good way to spend it, right? Not enough younger crowd in this one. Okay. Those were theme songs to TV shows, depending on which era you're from. And if you're from a little while back, you got the Jeffersons. And if you're from the, you know, 80s-ish, you got the Fresh Prince. And if you're from the modern generation or the younger generation now, you know that was Phineas and Ferb. You watch that stuff and you focus on that stuff day in and day out. What do you know? You got it memorized. And you can add to that 1,000 songs that you have memorized on your iPod playlist, and yet you still come around and go, I don't see how anybody can memorize that much stuff. You have all that stuff memorized. You just memorized something else. That whole word bank of stuff to memorize was all just focused on something else in your childhood. And if that's all you have, you don't have TV, iPods, or music, that's all you had, you'd begin to memorize it. And many of the parts of Scripture would have a rhythmic chanting to them, and so they would memorize these songs that they would sing as part of it. And so between 6 and 10, they would begin to learn these things. Now, along the way, some kids would drop out. Some kids would, you know, not make it through it and maybe go home and work on the family farm or whatever the house was doing. Around age 10, though, is where a lot of the kids would either continue to study, go on with their studies or go back home. All of the girls at this point would all be head back home. It was just the male-dominated society. It just doesn't make any sense to teach women. That's the way they thought. This is not my speaking. This is historic chauvinism. Now, amazing thing is, by the way, the reason why women are where they're at now is in large part to do Christianity's influence on the world. By the way, that's a different part. You can see that with Jesus teaching later on. So, moving on, because remember, Jesus had women all around him, like, teaching them all the time. That was not done in that day and time. So, moving on. I digress. So, from 10 to 14, for those who would continue on with studying, they would then learn to memorize the rest of the Bible. Okay, the rest of what we know known as our Old Testament. Yes, they would memorize the rest of it. And along with doing that, they would begin to dialogue and they would begin to interact with the text through a series of questions and answers. The way these would kind of go is sort of like Jeopardy in a sense. Like the teacher would ask a question and the students would have to interact with the question by answering another question that shows a learning and knowledge base. For instance, if the teacher would say, give me an easy, what are the first 5 books of the Bible? A student might answer, instead of saying Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, and Deuteronomy, instead might answer, what were the books that Moses wrote? See, it's the same answer. You get a little bit more in depth later on. How do you know that God is with you in the dark times? And then somebody might reply back, was God with Joseph when he was in the prison? See, now if you know the story of Joseph, you know that what it says over and over and over again in that story is every time things got bad for Joseph and it looked really dark, it says, and God was with him. That's right. It says, and God was with him. And so you'd see it shows learning of the text that you could interact with a question like, how do we know God's with us in the dark times? Wasn't he with Joseph in the prison? And so it's that kind of question-answer thing that then when you read in the book of Luke chapter 2, mama and daddy forget where Jesus is at. Jesus is back in the temple with the leading scholars of the day. And what was he doing? He was not teaching, actually. It says he was listening and asking questions. You see? He was asking questions. And these questions, the reason why you say teaching is we take it as that because he would ask questions that showed such a deep, profound understanding of the text, it would confound these scholars to actually contemplate and go, you know, I never thought of that. And so as they would throw out questions, Jesus would answer back with questions that would show a deep, profound answer. And you would see this same sort of idea and training was put to great use by Jesus throughout his time. When people would try to trap him with stuff, he would throw back another question. Like they came and say, what authority are you using to do all this? And he'd say, well, I'll tell you that if you can tell me what authority John the Baptist had. And that put him into a quandary because they didn't like John the Baptist, yet they knew all the people liked John the Baptist, so they didn't really have a good answer for him, so they'd walk away. And so this kind of questioning kind of thing, so it would happen back and forth. What's interesting about that Luke 2 passage was it changed my mind on what I always thought about Jesus. Right before it mentions that he was confounding the scribes, right before that and right after that, it says two interesting little verses. It says, and the child Jesus grew and became strong, and he was filled with wisdom and grace, and the grace of God was on him. And then after this section, it says, and Jesus grew in wisdom and stature and in favor with God and man. And you see, what that tells us is that Jesus had to learn all this stuff just like you and I have to learn all this stuff. You see, I always had this idea, like I never pictured baby Jesus in the crib spouting out like Psalms or something like that. I never really pictured that, but I sort of pictured that somewhere along the way, God just kind of like plugged the USB drive into his brain and downloaded the whole scriptures, and he just all of a sudden became totally fluent, right? That's. Am I the only one who kind of thought that? Some of y'all with me, hanging me out, that's fine. In reality, though, he had to learn this stuff just like you and me, which I think is amazing. Now, granted, I will say, him learning the scriptures, I'm guessing, was probably equivalent to LeBron James learning how to play basketball. Like, I learned how to play basketball, too. I just didn't quite have the same gifting that he has to play basketball. And I keep using him every service. I really need to switch to Michael Jordan because LeBron doesn't have an outside jump shot. So Michael Jordan learning how to play basketball, and I learned how to play basketball. Just I wasn't 6'6 and naturally coordinated, okay? He was. And I think the same was with Jesus, is that in the same way we're learning the scriptures, so did Jesus. It's just he had the same kind of natural coordination around the text that Jordan would have with a basketball. And I think that's the kind of gifting he had, not God, you know, gave everything to him. Because it says in Philippians 2 that he had emptied himself. But he came down here empty. He had to be filled up. He had to learn on his own. And the reason why that's so encouraging is for a guy like me who went off to seminary not knowing anything, I can't tell you how intimidated I was going to seminary. I walked in there and the teacher would ask something or throw something out, and then the preach-off would begin. Preach-off is where the teacher would say some statement or something controversial, and then everybody would feel the need to preach a little sermonette in class. Can you just imagine how fun that is, all right? Picture every good and bad and boring church all combined in one room, everybody preaching together at the same time. So I sat in there, though, and I just listened because I didn't have a clue what was going on in these classes because I didn't know enough Bible stuff. As a matter of fact, back in that day, the scriptures back then were contained in these large leather-bound things called books. Yeah, they look just like that. They have a lot of paper in them called pages that the text was written on. Nowadays, I know it's all digital. You just kind of like, when you need to look up Ezekiel, you just type in Ezekiel, and then the reference, it shows up. Back then, though, you had no idea where these things were. At least I didn't, okay? And the teacher would say Ezekiel 3, and kids would literally just go, yeah. Meanwhile, I'm sitting there. I was fortunate. I had a Bible with something called tabs on it. Any of y'all remember tabs? Tabs had little notes on the side that told you where that book of the Bible was. The problem was there's lots of Bible verses. There's a couple Bible books that start with letter M. A couple of them start with a Z, and they all get confusing after a while. But I would just sit there and run my finger down to try to find the thing. That was me going to seminary. And you can imagine how intimidated I was sitting in this room. It's good to know that Jesus was in that same boat at some point too. He walked into a classroom at age 6 not knowing the scriptures, other than what his mom and dad had taught him. And he had to learn all this stuff. And to me, that felt very comforting because it says in the scriptures that he was challenged in every way, just as you and I are. It was a challenge for him to learn this stuff, but he committed himself to it. And then you look at the disciples. Interesting thing about them is that the scholars looked at them and they said, what is with these guys? They're unschooled, ordinary guys, yet they're confounding us with their wisdom. Which says that as the schooling went on from age 6 to 10 to 14, at some point along the way, these guys all dropped out. And they went home to do their family fishing trade. And they're trying to figure out how are these Hebrew school dropouts confounding us with their knowledge of the scriptures. It's because they were disciples of Jesus. We're going to get that in a minute. So with these guys, as they would go through their schooling, by the time you got to age 14, that was sort of the end of your formal training. And now the highest, most respected position in the community was a rabbi. If you've ever seen the play Fiddler on the Roof or the movie version, you sort of get a sense of how honored this position of rabbi was in the community. And so it was a great esteem mark if you could become a rabbi in the community. And everybody would aspire to that. You would long for your children to become a rabbi. The only way you could become a rabbi is after you finish your formal training is if you could find a rabbi who would take you on as a student. And this was not an easy task because you can imagine they can only take on so many students at a time anyway. And so they would begin to quiz you to see just how well you knew your stuff. And they begin to ask you just, you know, quote passages out of the Bible. For instance, they would ask you to quote all the passages that talk about how God is with Joseph. And you'd have to quote from memory every single time it said God was with Joseph and give the context of it. Then they begin to test your knowledge even further where they would say to you, can you give me every passage that's a messianic prophecy in the book of Isaiah? And they would have to be able to quote from memory instantly every single passage there, no matter what the question was, goes for it. And then they got to a really complex form of questioning where the rabbi would quote a verse, and you had to know the verse well enough to know the context, so you could then quote another passage that interacted with that verse, but not really the whole thing, just a portion of it. And the rabbi would know that context so well that he could then throw out another passage with a context that interacted, and you could throw out, and you would go back and forth with this. And I'm going to give you a New Testament example of this and see if you can kind of follow along. For instance, in your Philippians 2, in your relationships with one another, have the same mindset as Christ. At which point you go, ah, yes, just as the serpent said to the woman. Yes, yes, my son, as the serpent said to the woman, because everyone did what was right in their own eyes. Mm-hmm. And Jesus saw him under the fig tree. Now, how many are ready to be a disciple? How many, any of y'all follow that one? All right, I'm not taking on any disciples this morning. Thank goodness. No, just kidding. The whole point there is that when he said you should have the same mind of Christ, right after this says he emptied himself, even though he was himself divine, did not consider equality with God as something to be grasped. Equality with God, something to be grasped. And the serpent said to the woman, the day that you eat of the fruit of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, you will become like God, knowing good and evil. See, Christ says, I'm going to empty myself and not consider equality with God something to be grasped. The serpent says, but if you eat this, you can become like God. And then in the time of Judges, when this all played out over the years and years and years, each person did what was right in their own eyes. Why? Because they saw themselves as the God unto themselves. And the next verse says, and there was no king in the land of Israel. And later on, when Jesus comes to Nathanael and says, I saw you under the fig tree. You know what Nathanael says back? You are the king of Israel. See the way that all plays out? Some of y'all still lost. Okay, that's fine. Either way, that's the kind of dialogue that they would have. And it's sort of, when I was reading through this and studying this, it reminded me of growing up. My dad's a doctor and my sister's a doctor, okay? And they would have these conversations that I would be like, I'm lost. Could y'all speak English? I'm done with the Latin. And then they'd all say, oh yeah, and a duodenum. I got nothing. I don't know. You know, or they'd see something on a plate and they'd name some body organism gizmo thing that looks like under a microscope. And they'd all laugh. And I'm like, I don't even know what you're talking about. And I just felt like a moron. And that's really what it would be like. You'd have to know the thing so well that anybody else walking around would think, I have no idea what they're talking about. And so if you could keep up with that kind of game, then maybe, just maybe, he might say to you, come, follow me. Which is saying to you, I want you to do as I do, live as I live, learn what I know, because I think that you have what it takes to hold the most respected place in the community as a rabbi. So take all of that, put it aside. Now go back to creepy Jesus flick. I can't make up for the acting and the low budget, but it begins to help understand when he walks up to fishermen. Okay, these are dropouts. These guys did not make it through school. They didn't even attempt probably to go find a rabbi to see if they could become a rabbi. They just dropped out. And so here he says to them, come, follow me. And so what do? Brian Scalabrine and Bob Ross jump at the chance to leave their stuff behind and go. And then when he sees the guys on the boat and he says, come follow me, and they ditch their dad and walk off. Now in the movie, they kind of miss the whole context because the dad's kind of like, you're leaving me to clean up? Really? You guys just going to run off lollygagging and having fun? Okay. No. In that situation, that setting, the dad would be so honored, so amazed that his kids are being chosen to be rabbis. He would have been jumping up and down with joy. The next day he gets into synagogue, he'd be going bragging to everybody. You know, Jesus, the famous rabbi who's been coming around healing people, he thinks my kids have what it takes to become a rabbi. Would have blown their minds. Who would have thought my kids could do it? And that's what the message you need to hear this morning is. You see, when we hear about things in our day and time, we talk about how God wants you to play an essential part of what he's doing to redeem all of Virginia Beach. You hear that and you're like, yeah, but I don't really have what it takes. I mean, I know you've studied all this stuff. You got, because whenever we're asked to do things, we're always like, well, I don't know enough. And I don't really, that's just not my thing. I'm just not good at that. I get that. I still don't feel pastoral. I don't know what that means, but I just never have felt pastoral. I compare myself to other pastors, and I just don't feel pastoral. I'm looking back there at Pastor Louie. Louie, could you stand up for a minute? Does this man look pastoral or what? He has an ambiance that carries the room. Me, I walk in, thank you, Louie, sorry. I walk in, you don't even know I'm here, right? But Louie walks in, you're like, who's that? That's Pastor Louie. Oh, okay. You know, it's just, he's got the ambiance. He's got the aura. I never had that. I always felt intimidated by that. And And yet, still, I knew God called me into ministry. To make matters worse, I went to this like called to ministry class at my college. I was at Florida State. It was this church that had this called to ministry class. And literally the topic of discussion for the first 2 months is, what are you doing here, Steve? Because everybody in that room was like, you don't belong here. And I was like, yeah, I don't really feel like I do either. I'm with you. I just know that God wants me to do ministry. I don't really know why, but I feel that way. And then I went off to seminary. I didn't fit in there. I won't even get into all the stuff that people said about me there. But somehow, some way, I made it through the whole process. And I figured out this is where I belong. I still don't feel like a pastor. I still look at other pastors in town and think, wow, I wish I could be like them. And I'm still intimidated by it. And you need to know that about me. Because when I look to you and say, God wants you to play an essential part of what he's doing to redeem Virginia Beach, you probably have the same thoughts that I do. Really, what on earth could I do? How could God possibly use me? Here's the thing. God looked at unskilled, ordinary men. He looked at the worst of the worst sinners in his time. And he looked at them and said, you have what it takes to be a rabbi. You have what it takes to be one of my disciples. And it says in the book of Acts that these unskilled, ordinary people turn the world upside down. God used to do them something absolutely amazing. And you think, yeah, well, that's got to be for somebody else because I just don't have that. I don't have that it factor about me. And God's saying, no, you do. You do. Is it because of your past? I can take care of that. Is it because you don't know enough? Well, just commit yourself to it as much as you did Fresh Prince and you'll know it. Seriously, you know, put some time into it. Think about it. Meditate on it. Focus on it. May the words of God be like honey on your lips, something you look forward to and long for and enjoy and learn from. And then just follow me. Just follow me. And yes, it is a simple. What would Jesus do in this situation? What would Jesus do if he was a 15-year-old going to my school and having to look at this text message? How would he respond? What would Jesus do if he was in a marriage like mine? What would he do? What would Jesus do if he was retired and extra time on his hands? What would he do? And so you begin to study his words and you study how he acted and lived. See, yeah, God can use you just like he's used me. And my favorite thing as a pastor, this is the best part of the job, is when I look out and I see people having a meaningful impact and I know their backstory. And I look at them and I say, you know, if you knew that guy two years ago, never in a million years would you ever be thinking somebody would be saying bad about him. And I guarantee you there's people who grew up with him who don't know what he's doing now and never in a million years would picture him there. And I know because I was one of those. I wouldn't accept it when I first came back to church. And I still don't feel like a pastor. I just feel like a Christian who learned a lot about the Bible and I'm trying to help other people do the same. That's it. And someday I'll feel pastoral, I think. That's why we have Pastor Bobby and everybody else around me who does that really good. But I want you to hear, if nothing else, no matter what you've done, no matter what you've become, what your background is or how much you feel like you don't know, God looks upon you and upon me and says, I want you to play an essential part in what I'm doing to redeem humanity. And every one of you has the potential to be a leader. Leader in your home, leader with your family, leader at your work. I hear stories. I told you the story of John a couple weeks ago. John just liked a girl, and his girl made him come to church. And next thing you know, his whole office comes to church. And if you were to ask him 2 years ago, hey, John, are you going to lead your whole office to Christ? He'd have been like, to who? I don't even go to church. I love stories like that. And your story like that is waiting just for you to follow after Christ and take him up on the offer to follow him. Would you join with me as we close?
Thank you for listening to the Essential Church Podcast. Let me encourage you to pause for a moment and reflect on what you've heard. It's not the hearing of the word, but the application that makes all the difference.